Good morning and welcome everyone to our meeting of the TCEQ Tax Relief for Pollution Control Property Advisory Committee. And I want to, first of all, well, I'll get into that in a few minutes. I'll go ahead and go through the recognition of committee members. I don't know if Eddie, last I heard, Eddie's here. All right, good. All right. Okay. Bennett sent us an email this morning that said he there was an illness that he can't make it. And I know Roland is in Arizona watching his graduation of his oldest grandchild. He's telling me he just couldn't go home and live with his wife if he missed that one. So I understand. So, we try not to exclude anyone, of course, but we're getting close to our timeline. And we'll get into that in a couple of minutes, too. I want to remind everybody that the public comments are welcome here. In fact, we encourage public comments, but please recognize that we need to keep those within the purview of our committee. Some things that you might talk about, but we have absolutely no authority to act on or advise on. And also, if we can keep, what's the time limit so we can manage our time and get through what we need to address today. So, and I should have noted, I think we actually started at 10:03 when I started talking, but just for the record. But any other general comments from the committee before we get started? I want to make one very general comment. And that is, of course, the timeline that TCEQ staff gave us probably a couple of months ago. It indicates that they plan to submit a draft or publish a draft May 28th. So that's why we're here today, to try to have a little bit more input into that. I think the draft has already been prepared, but there's possibility to amend it if we have any significant revisions today. So, in other words, it's now our wait till next year, or close to that. Not necessarily. We can still go through the public comments period, I guess, and have some input. But anyway, we certainly would like to, if we have anything we want to put before the commission or the executive director. Yes, please, Chance, set me straight.
Let me comment on that just to, so y'all can be clear on how important these two meetings that y'all have scheduled. If y'all do have something that's very pertinent to what we're going to be talking about here today on the equation, we would want to know what kind of language that would look like so we can go to the commissioners, because all that will have to be discussed on agenda day. So we want to be very sure that the language is what y'all feel comfortable with and the agency feel comfortable with, because once it's proposed, then we'll have to deal with that language during the public comment period.
And the agenda meeting is scheduled for June 16th.
June 16th, correct. And the commissioners have the language at this point, and it will be released on the 28th.
So. Right, okay. So. And it'll be on your website. The 28th is the plan?
Correct. Okay. It'll be filed for backup.
All right, great. Thank you. I want to make a comment. Next on the agenda is minutes from previous committee meeting. Yes.
May I interrupt?
Yeah, sure.
Just make sure I'm straight on where we are on this. So I'm not sure I am. The commissioners have a packet of rule changes that they're considering for publication. Is that it?
Yes. The rule package has been submitted to the commissioners.
To the commissioners. Mm-hmm. And that's, we haven't seen that yet, right?
Right. The commissioners will not release the rule language until after they reviewed it.
Right. We have offered some advice to the commission. Do we know where that advice we gave?
All your advice has been put into the rule package to this point.
And is in
the
that
commissioners package? Have an executive summary and are reviewing that.
Okay. That's helpful. And then they'll decide on what they publish, and then we'll have a chance to because we don't know what other issues might be raised in there. Is that correct?
That will definitely be all laid out during the agenda on the 16th. Any questions they have? They will be calling upon the committee, just so you'll know. So they would want to hear from you as well during that day. So I'm saying it's very important as a committee to make sure what it is that left that y'all want to advise the commission on. So since it's already been drafted and given to the commission, the stuff that you would be given additionally would not be in there, so it'd be very important on what that language would look like on the day of the agenda, so the commissioners can be prepared or have it all laid out before them for, to have an objective decision to make.
You would like it in like red line, existing language, and then red line whatever we're going to.
Yeah, just whatever like whatever it is y'all are going to. Okay. Yeah, whatever it is. Yes.
And it's my understanding if we have a significant advice today that we want to present to the commission, that then basically is the mechanism, you'll basically take it and pretty much walk down the hall to executive director and
try. It would help that the EDA is aware of the language. However, you don't have to make us aware. I mean, if y'all want to go to the commissioners and talk on your own, that's your prerogative. But it would be helpful if the ED would know to be able to have that discussion on agenda day on the implications of whatever it is that you may or may not do.
Okay, so similar, go ahead.
Well, my only point is we don't know what all issues might be in this package, right? We won't know until when?
The rule language will be released on the 28th. However, I mean, y'all pretty much discussed all the issues since we've been meeting, because there's not one thing y'all haven't touched on. It's just a matter of what direction you want to go in.
Right.
And so that's what we're here. That's what we're here for today, to kind of seek your guidance on what direction we're going to go in, not what it is that we already have.
And as a reminder to the committee and the public may not know, but we've scheduled a June 4th meeting basically to review what's been published May 28th. And I don't have the agenda out yet, but I'll have it out real soon.
You just answered my question.
Okay.
We've been doing a lot of talking about 28s and 26s and 16s, and I have not had the month straight. And so I was assuming we're not going to see what's in the packet until after the 16th, when it's released on the 28th, and in fact it's released on the 28th before the 16th. So I understand.
Right.
That helps me a lot.
And just so you know, I mean, the items that you have listed in your agenda are very pertinent to the issues that are still at hand. And y'all seen the options the ED are currently looking at. So you have those before you. It's not like it's nothing you haven't seen before. And those options are in there as well. So it's just a matter of which direction.
Okay. I'm very clear now on the process, and I apologize for being slow on the pickup.
All right.
And just one more clarifying question. So if we were able as a group to come up with some decisions on some of the things before us today, could that in any way influence what's published the 28th? Or probably not, but it would still be good to have that?
It just depends.
Depends.
It just depends. It would be a very expedited process we'd have to go through in order to do that.
But if we were able to make decisions, you could at least include that to the executive director and the commissioners as advice that came from the committee.
Sure.
So they would know that. They would have that before then.
Yes.
Okay.
I sort of envision a similar process as the last time we did at the site and deleted that language and had substitute language for that. So we'd be emailing drafts and talking back and forth and then submitting to TCEQ legal staff and making sure it aligns with the law, and then it kind of goes through that. So in other words, we don't have much time to do all that. So, but I think that is the process, unless someone can correct me. Okay. All right, any other discussion, general comments? Number two on the agenda is minutes from previous committee meeting, and I mentioned this because we would like to change the the process we're doing, and I mentioned this to the committee, but for the public, basically, we're going to review the minutes from the previous meeting, and we're going to email it and kind of vote by email, and all of that is only so we can get it on the website a lot quicker. Because otherwise, it could be quite a while before the next committee meeting, and we vote on approval of that. So that's just kind of a minor thing I want to mention to all of you.
Mr. Chairman?
Yes.
It has been noted to me by an individual that made a presentation at our last, I don't have the minutes with me. And I know that, I think you sent them out, and I looked at them and said, look fine to me. Since that time, I've been notified by someone who came up and gave a presentation and said, hey, it doesn't mention that I came up and made any remarks, and I thought I asked a pertinent question and that got a response that I wanted on the record, and that's not anywhere. And so he's asking about that. So I don't have the minutes here, but I wanted to raise that issue and ask how you think we ought to deal with that.
That's a fair point. I'll admit I didn't look through all the testimonies and check them off. Will the staff take another look at that? And
yeah, we can go back and, you know, we do have audio files of every meeting, so we can go back and review the audio file. And
can you look for the comments of David Hodgins?
Okay, so this was a person that came and addressed the committee. I don't think we have ever approved any.
David's here, and he's just mentioned this to me. And
that's fine, but I just want to make note that all the minutes that you have approved, all the people that came before you and spoke, they are not indicated by name on the minutes. They're just indicated that people came up and addressed the committee. So those comments are really wouldn't be described in your minutes, but they are held within the audio files.
Okay.
My feedback wasn't so much that I came up and made a comment, and you have to have David Hodgins in the minutes. It was, as I recall, you actually made a motion to adopt formally the final rule in its final language. If you remember, you guys went back and forth, you crafted it, you distributed it, and then there was an action, at least acknowledging that this rule is the one to go forward, and everybody support that. That's not reflected anywhere in the minutes, that action, number one.
Yeah.
Maybe I misunderstood. And then secondly, there were comments about what you had. Remember, Mr. Chairman, you had a copy and the public didn't have a copy, and then we received it, and there were some comments about it in its application. The question before the committee was how it applied to certain circumstances. I know this is a month ago, and asking everyone, because the public didn't know, could you give us an illustration? And then kind of jokingly, I said, hypothetically, a hydrotreater. And the information, if it's coming back, was that the committee commented that application of the rule as proposed to a hydrotreater for a refinery, an exemption would not be granted. That was a fairly
You may be looking at the wrong minutes.
I apologize.
March 26th meeting is the meeting that we voted on the at the site.
Correct.
And that, as I recall, that issue was included in there, and the motion. There was a link.
David, that's how I remember it as well. Is that the last meeting when you asked your question was the first meeting after we adopted the at-the-site advice.
Correct. The distinction is when you took your action in March, it was in the form of a resolution. At the time, you did not have the final proposed language.
Oh, TCEQ's revision.
You went through the exact process that you're now proposing you're going to go through again if something's decided today. At the April meeting, this body reviewed that final proposed language that went through the process with legal, the actual red line version.
Okay, I'm with you.
You took an action. Everyone said, here's the proposed language. Is this agreeable to the body? Mr. Chairman, you announced that.
Right.
Everyone said yes.
And we commend the TCU staff for the revision.
You thank them for their good work. There is no reflection of that, of basically y'all approving, not the motion to take the action, but the final language that was vetted, finalized, and now is probably, I'm assuming, going to be part of your May 28th package. That is not reflected in the minutes. Normally, that would be. And that was my point. And then secondly, there were comments that were not online, it was by me, but there were comments about that rule and its application. Not that there has to be a name, but it says no public comments, which is not accurate. So it was just trying, it's a clarification.
Okay.
But this body took an action, or at least adopted something and approved it, if you will, and that's not reflected in your minutes.
Right.
It should be.
Emmanuel or Chance or someone, can you check into that first? Okay.
I do, looking at the minutes, it does say no additional comment was received after we opened the meeting for public comment, so.
Right. That just needs to be clarified.
Seems fair.
Okay.
Seems like a
fair
observation.
Apologize for taking your time. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
All right. Sure.
So would you want to, how would you want to proceed? Do you want to approve the minutes with an amendment? Or would we just wait and approve them June 4th?
I think we'll probably have to approve them June 4th.
Okay.
But reconsider the motion or the previous approval.
Yeah, and just a request to staff to review the tapes and decide where the appropriate placement of that vote should occur. I would agree that that vote needs to be reflected here. The cap is the first consider revision of rules item under the minutes, and that's probably not accurate. If we took that vote, it probably happened right before that. So that might need to be reflected, review the tapes. On the issue of comments, I think it is important to say that comments were received, probably. I think it might be a little bit of a bad precedent to say we want to sum up the comments or the commentary. I definitely understand why it was important that a record was made. I think a record has been made, and it could be transcribed, probably. I certainly understand the request, but I think it might be a bad precedent for us to say we're going to, when we talk about the comments, try to sum them up. I think we do need to correct the reference that no comment was received, for sure. But we can take up at our next meeting in a revised set of minutes if you all deem that appropriate once you listen to the tape.
Makes sense to me.
Is that red line document show up on the website along with the minutes? If not, it ought to be.
If it's not, we will. I believe so. But if it's not, we will.
Using the method that you have used, which is to have a hyperlink.
Yes, we do hyperlinks to the.
Right.
Right.
Any other comments on this issue? All right, then we'll get into the meat of our meeting then. I've been requested, and it seems a reasonable request to take one out of order. We'll go to 3C next, and primarily because I suspect the most of our discussion will be on 3A and B. So 3C should probably take less time for us to discuss, and I don't want that to be kind of forgotten about after we have a lengthy discussion about the others. So if we'll go to 3C next. Do we have any proposals, any discussion on 3C?
Well, Chairman, this is a proposal that I laid out at our last meeting and just wanted everybody to have a chance to digest it. I think on the handouts on the table, we have a markup of page 2, and I would ask staff, whose handwriting is this? And is there some staff? Yeah, it looks like it's the second page of the Part B list refinements. And I wondered, is this handwriting indicates some preference of staff that we modify the language, or?
Is that not your handwriting?
No. I wish it was that good. That's sad, isn't it?
That was passed out by you at not the last committee meeting, but the one before, I believe. That was that was that document, if I recall.
Okay, this is two. Yeah, what I did last meeting, to clarify for the record, last meeting I distributed a document that
the B list,
the refined Part B list. It integrated two sets of changes. One, the ones that we kind of had made in handwriting the meeting before. Okay, and Mr. Hatlett pointed out it was kind of a funny thing that all of these descriptions are actually laid out in guidance.
but we might want to update them. And so last time, I distributed a list that provided an updated version of those descriptions. No substantive changes, in my opinion. But so last meeting, when I distributed, this is, I guess, the point being, this document's out of date. It really, I don't think it'll help you. I have copies of this, again, if you don't mind, Chance. There should be 20 of them.
Has it been given to the committee?
This is what I handed out last. Yeah, this is what I handed out last meeting.
Okay.
Okay. So I, just so make sure everybody still got it, I wanted to get it. I brought an extra copy of it.
I was here last meeting.
Okay, good. Let's get it to Eddie. I don't remember. Did I email it as well?
No, I don't.
Might have only distributed a hard copy. While everybody's getting a copy of that, I should have plenty.
We don't have copies, I don't think.
Yeah, he's handing them out. This is just a, while everybody's getting their copy, what we've done here is two meetings ago, I teed up the issue of we ought to have a Part B list that includes descriptions, because that would be helpful. If the rule is going to have a table, I think we should describe things. It should also break things out. That's completely in line with the way the guidance document currently works. The guidance document has descriptions and does break things out. The substantive change that I'm proposing mainly results or is in two categories. One, based on some discussions we've had about GHG reductions, greenhouse gas reductions, and a desire to perhaps have the Part B list bless the concept that not just carbon dioxide reductions would be creditable, but greenhouse gas reductions or, you know, carbon equivalents. So that's one substantive area that I'll cover and remind everybody about. And then the second is that in the instance of five separate sub-items, B4, B12, B15, A, B15B, and B15, I said that wrong. It's B15B, B15C, and B15D. So it's B15, B, C, and D, B4, and B12. I'm proposing that we change the V, the variable, to 100%. And this was based on my discussion that I've had since the beginning of our meetings, that there are actually some things that on this list that are no-brainers. I don't think, I'm not asking the committee to go down the road with me on partial percentages or try to advocate what I think would be a closer call. I think that everything on these items is either affirmatively blessed already in the tables or there should be no real debate about that. Let me take up the greenhouse gas issue first, and then we can take up the 100%, if that makes sense to the committee. To remind everybody, Robert had a proposal early on about trying to get our arms around how we can make sure that other greenhouse gas emission reductions would still be clarified to qualify as exempt once greenhouse gases are a regulated pollutant. So to do that, to accomplish that, there are a few items on this list where, let me get my notes here. I'm going to point you to the numbers. This shows up, this issue shows up on B15B, B15F, and B16. We primarily discussed it in terms of B16. If you'll remember, the statute that created the Part B, or the concept of a predetermined list that the agency has implemented in Part B, was spoke in terms of carbon dioxide. And I believe it is a fair implementation of the statute, and I don't think there's a whole lot of debate about this, that we should recognize that it's also greenhouse gas, other greenhouse gases. So the language was intended to do, to implement that concept of, and I'll just read it so for the folks who don't have a copy. Greenhouse gas capture and sequestration equipment is the equipment item. Property that is used, constructed, acquired, or installed wholly or partly to capture carbon dioxide or other regulated greenhouse gases from an anthropogenic source in this state that is then sequestered in this state. The parenthetical after that says this item is only in effect if the EPA adopts a final rule or regulation regulating carbon dioxide as a pollutant. I'll point out, not a single one of these Well, this item and then item B15F that I'll talk about next, I'm not asking that we change the percentage to 100. These are still variables. This is an undefined category. The commission's going to be making case-specific determinations about percentages. All we're doing here is trying to make sure that the B list contemplates greenhouse gases, not just carbon dioxide, for purposes of procedural treatment. B15F, I'm going to work my way up. There's three examples. B15F, cryogenic technology. Cryogenic cooling systems used to reduce pollution, including carbon dioxide, if the U.S. EPA adopts a final rule or regulation regulating carbon dioxide as a pollutant. I'm not aware of cryogenic technology being applied to other greenhouse gases, so it just says carbon dioxide there. Okay. And remember, these descriptions actually appear in some form in guidance already. Okay, this wasn't something we just made up. B15B, amine or chilled ammonia scrubbing, equipment installed to provide post-combustion capture of pollutants, parenthetical, including carbon dioxide, if the US EPA adopts a final rule or regulation regulating carbon dioxide as a pollutant. That one,
I've lost track of the issue.
I'm trying to give you, for the people who don't actually have a copy, I was just trying to read the description of the three items. That's what I'm doing.
Okay.
The issue is I'm offering up for adoption by the advisory committee to a recommendation of this commission staff that these revisions to the Part B list, which says set out in regulations, be a part of their rule proposal. That the equipment descriptions be included in rule, not just in guidance, because they're in guidance now. And that we identify, like I said, five different sub-items as having a percentage reduction of 100 as opposed to variable, based on the argument I'm saying.
So are these all new descriptions? Is that it? Everything that's highlighted here is a new description?
It's new to the rules, okay? Most of this, it's probably 90% existing in guidance, okay? And what I did, if you remember, I think this reflects it in part, is I had a discussion two meetings ago about what we changed from the guidance description, okay? And I don't believe them to be substantive changes. I think what we're doing is we're updating the descriptions, and I've asked staff for their input, and I assume that if we offer this up as a recommendation of the committee, if staff has heartburn about the way any of these descriptions work, they will let us know that. But it's not my understanding that these descriptions substantively change what the guidance provides now. They're just better technical descriptions of the equipment. The substantive change is the inclusion of GHGs, not just carbon dioxide, and the 100%.
100% because of redundancies.
You refer to a greenhouse gas. What are you talking about?
Talking about pollutants that have been identified by EPA or chemicals, compounds that have been identified by EPA as contributing to greenhouse gas effect.
So there's some list there that EPA is working on.
Right, right. And particularly I'm not going to make Robert's case for him, but in industries that don't necessarily have a lot of carbon dioxide emissions but might have some other greenhouse gas regulated emissions, it would be kind of unfair to focus only on carbon because they're going to be required to reduce GHGs, so not just carbon dioxide.
B7, exhaust heat recovery boilers. Description, used to recover the heat from boiler to generate additional steam. Was this suggesting that any exhaust heat recovery thing that recovers heat from a boiler to generate additional steam is exempt?
Can I insert a comment real quick?
One circumstance.
Right. Don, it might help you if you get 1131K and kind of laid alongside this, because most of it's what it is, and I think what he's doing is splitting out some of these.
Yeah, there's two things that we're doing here. All of this is laid out. Everything in the left column is laid out in statute with a slight variation, which is highlighted in B16. And if you look at B15. All of those sub-items A through F, those are collapsed into one item in the statute. The staff has already in their guidance broken out B into BA through F, B15, into B15A through F. So that's already in guidance. And the description, especially, and I think this is true as to relates to the question you just raised about B7, those descriptions are already laid out in guidance. If we have improvements to those descriptions, this would be an opportunity to roll those in. My purpose two meetings ago was to put everybody on notice that I wanted to do this, give everybody a chance to read those descriptions. I proposed some language that were some updates to the descriptions that staff used in their guidance based on input from the technical community in our industry. And so this document simply reflects those somewhat revised descriptions of the property. But important clarification, this list does not mean the property is exempt unless a percentage is in the right column. The way the staff has implemented the statute is, no, the statute didn't tell us that these things are all exempt automatically. We're supposed to use the same discretion that we always had. Members of the legislature have clarified that to be the case. I support that interpretation. However, there are items on the list that are already reflected, and there are items that I believe we can agree, reasonable minds can agree, that should be exempt. And I wouldn't want, and we don't want the Part B list to continue to exist and have a V next to it to create an argument that somehow that we were not entitled to that exemption. I think the spirit of the statute was where the agency believes there to be agreement that this property is exempt, it's supposed to identify a percentage.
I want to make it clear I'm not an attorney, but I will comment 1131K, which does say that says the TCEQ shall adopt rules establishing a non-exclusive list, which must include. So there are things that these 18 items that we must include, but there are other things that we may, or the TCEQ may include, is the way I interpret that.
That's right.
But the percentages that you're talking about, those were items that were already redundant in different sections.
Yeah,
Section A, and that's all. That was just getting rid of some of the overlap.
Yeah. First off, I don't have any problem with anything you've done here, and I don't even have any problem with the ones that have 100% on them because they're purely pollution control. Unless there's some weird case that I haven't seen. My question is the ones that we do, and this may be a question for staff, the ones that we deem that are 100% or already exist in the, I hate having a mixed list here. Can we move those things into our pre-approved list and take them off this? Or just so people aren't looking at two separate lists, if it's not there, you know, it's in the other list. I hate duplication.
It's really a procedural question for staff. I agree with
right,
it.
Right.
Is if you treat these as tier ones,
right,
under the predetermined list, will they get the same procedural treatment as they get because they're on tier four? Because the clear statutory direction is that tier four will get a different procedural treatment, and I think it's a fair question for staff. Will items that are on this list get some special procedural treatment that they wouldn't get if they were on just the tier one list?
For the record, Tim Reedy, TCEQ Environmental Law Division. I think regardless of whether these items appeared on the tier one list, we're required by statute to have them on the part the 1131K list, and so they would be subject to the different procedural requirements. Again, we're required to maintain at least these 18 items, so we would have to have it on two.
Well, can we reference that it's also in tier one?
I don't foresee any problems with that.
Can we do that in the description so we can?
I just think it would be simplified for somebody trying to do something.
Right. I agree. For example, B4 is exactly the same as A83.
Right.
Yeah, and just reference that it's already in the.
I think a clean approach
that's
would
good,
be
Ryan.
is that we put them in both lists, and that we cross-reference. I mean, if we're going to put 100% on something on this page, it's a tier one item.
Yeah.
And that's what, one of the things this committee is going to do. And staff can push back if they like, but I think to be clean, it probably ought to be in Tier 1 and Tier 4 and then cross-reference each other.
Okay.
Can you go through, like, I see B4 flue glass recirculation components. I have no problem with it being 100%. It's on the A list. Can you go through the other four items that you're proposing as 100% and tell me whether or not they're already on the A list?
Well, I can tell you that...
Probably B12 is the only one that's not, or...
Well, there's components. The problem is that there's some components of a system that manages coal combustion products, for example,
mm-hmm.
okay, that would be considered, you know, on the list, but not the system. And there are items on B15, the B15, B, C, and Ds, that just are so new that they're not yet on the list.
So 15, B15, B, C, and D are not yet on, they're not on the A list. Is that a correct
statement? You could make an argument that B15D might be able to be squeezed under some kind of scrubbing, but I don't want to, I don't think you can represent that these things are on the Tier 1 list.
And scrubbers are A5, so it could
be. You could make an A5 argument for those, all those items. But again, the statute used that specific language. The agencies appropriately put that language into a list. I'm just trying to marry that implementation of the statute with the common sense that the program would recognize these things as exempt. I think Wayne understands that.
Yeah, I would object to saying, you know, B15B is on the A list because we have to wait for the EPA to...
Yeah, exactly.
But other than that... I mean,
so you want to make a motion?
Yeah, I, and here's the thought is I'll make a motion that we adopt the Part B list, and I'm going to read into the record what the revisions would be.
Can we have some, because we still haven't really discussed some of these descriptions.
Sure. It's good to get a motion on the table, perhaps a second, and then we can discuss it, and then we can implement the changes. I mean, just procedurally, I'd make a motion that we adopt the Part B list as we read into the
record. Can I just list my concern with B12? Are we being clear? We're not talking about exempting an entire system to get coal or biomass or whatever gasified. We're talking about the system only to take the pollutants out of it, right?
That's right.
Yeah, because I'm concerned that this will be too broadly interpreted and we'll get applications that won't want to take the whole preparation for gasification system off the tax rolls, which I don't think is what this is about.
And I can see that this language might need to be clarified. I have no problem in principle, but I agree with him that perhaps the language could be...
And we could even add does not include... materials.
So it wouldn't be the coal grinding and drying equipment.
No.
It would be the equipment taking stuff out that you're not going to gasify, basically, right?
That's right. Well, it's actually, you know, if you look at it, it's equipment used for handling, storage, or treatment of coal combustion or gasification byproducts.
Okay.
And so it's all after combustion or after gasification.
Okay.
I think the language says that, but I'm open to inserting a word or two that would help clarify.
And maybe what you just said is, you know, after gasification, you know, insert that or a separate, you know.
How about we just insert, I mean, this is a little redundant, but I'm okay with redundancy if it helps clarify it. We insert the phrase post hyphen in front of coal combustion and gasification. So we would say equipment used for handling, storage, or treatment of post-coal combustion or post-gasification byproducts. I don't know. That's not accurate. Paul's going to hit me about the head for that. Engineers wouldn't like that. Because these materials are generated when you combust coal. They're generated when you gasify coal. But it's definitely nothing before the process. So maybe we just say does not include handling, storage, or treatment of materials prior to the combustion or gasification of fuel.
That'd be fine.
Yeah. I'm just, given the history of this program, I'm worried about.
So I'm going to say does not include the handling, storage, or treatment of, what word do you want to use, compounds?
How about of uncombusted coal?
Of uncombusted fuel?
Fuel, fine.
Uncombusted fuel.
Mm-hmm.
I'm comfortable with that, Paul.
So does not include non-combustible or uncombusted
fuel?
Fuel?
Is that how y'all say unburnt?
Yeah.
And then this isn't prior to. I don't like the idea of uncombusted because then you could get into an argument about, well, does something make it to the gasification chamber without getting gasified? Or, so let's say that does not include the handling, storage, or treatment of compounds prior to the combustion or gasification of fuel.
How about fuel? Oh, okay, that's fine. Yeah, yeah.
And then this is another clarification. This isn't one of the 100% deals, but on B5, equipment that removes sulfur, carbon, and other compounds, should it be other polluting compounds?
That's what we have written in from the last time.
Oh, yeah, I think we talked about that last time.
Okay, good. Good catch. What else do you have written in there, bud?
Well, as the heading where it says equipment, second category says property.
Do we say property in the rules now? You know, part B.
A list, we say property.
Yeah, okay, property. That's a good change. So we're going to strike equipment and insert property. What else?
I think Bob had put in, and I don't know whether he's, I agree with this or not, but he had put in B10, enhanced efficiency steam turbines, which again is that we're not talking about 100%.
Right. That's right.
As
that's
opposed
right.
to equipment installed in order to reduce ambient.
Yeah, I apologize. We did make these hand revisions, and I didn't put them in this version. So here, let me repeat what those are. We're going to insert polluting in front of compounds under B5, like we just described. We're going to replace equipment with property at the heading on the top of the page. On the B10 item, we struck that description and we included the phrase enhanced efficiency steam turbines. And again, that's not, staff's still going to make a call about those on an individual basis. It was just a better technical description. And then I have changed. Well, no, we didn't change. We struck the term criteria under B18. If you look at B18, where it says criteria air pollutant, we struck the term criteria.
Okay.
Why are we striking the term criteria? Wasn't that in the statute itself?
That's what I think. 1131K.
Why did we strike it? Paul, can you remember why we did that?
I don't think that in the law, paragraph 18 restricts it to criteria. Any other equipment designed to prevent capture of bait or monitor nitrogen oxide, volatile organic compounds, particulate matter, mercury, carbon monoxide, or any criteria pollutant.
That's right. So that doesn't necessarily...
doesn't say any...
I'd almost like to say regulated.
Mercury is not a criteria pollutant, is the point that Paul appropriately made. Mercury is a hazardous pollutant, but not a criteria pollutant.
I'd say regulated pollutant.
Right, right. And lead is a criteria pollutant, but is not listed here.
Right.
Right.
So let's say regulated air pollutant control equipment. How's that sound? I like Wayne's change.
Yeah.
Does that work, Paul? Regulated.
Yeah, this description will still say what's in the law.
Yeah,
but just the category.
When the agency had to implement the statute, they had to create a title for these things, and some of them were easy because they were in the statute, but this one was a catch-all, and as Bob described, the only language in the statute is what's in the description. So they had to create a title, and all we're doing is trying to figure out what the accurate title is.
And frankly, no one is probably ever going to use that category anyway, because they're going to be things on the A-list.
Yeah, that's right. Because it doesn't do you any good.
Right.
I mean, you're going to go to the A-list to get your objective percentages. But to be clean, I think regulated is a better term than criteria, because it doesn't fit. I agree. That's a good catch.
And all that, are we ready for a motion?
Actually, can I do one last?
So go ahead, Cyrus. Go ahead, Myra.
Mr.
I was just going to ask on B16, were we going to talk about the language in here after the motion? Is the greenhouse gas capture and sequestration equipment?
I think we're close enough to, let's have that discussion, and then I'll make a motion that includes all the revisions so we can just have it done.
Okay.
And then I'll generate a document that reflects that. I mean, it'd be better than us having to come back and have another email. I gotta believe that this discussion we're going to have on these other items is going to result in another set of emails. I'd rather us do this cleanly.
Are you the scrivener on all this?
Yeah, I'm doing the writing, and I'm going to read them into the record.
But okay. You don't have a chance to produce something that can be copied and we can see what all these changes we just talked about.
During a break, I can write it, but I'll read it to everybody in a motion, because I think we need to do that anyway.
Well, we can defer action and get copies and bring it back.
Mm-hmm. Do we have an ability to print very easily? We could.
We can make a change.
Okay. Yeah.
I mean, Mike, I haven't heard anything that...
You can send me an email.
Yeah, I'll make these revisions. I'll send them an email. They'll get us something in front of us. How's that sound?
I think that'd be good. I haven't heard anything here that I think isn't fine. It's just
like to see it.
Keeping all the various
for action today, right?
Yeah, I want.
Yeah. I don't have action today.
No. My question is about this idea of on the K-1 list. It says gas. I don't know if it says carbon dioxide or greenhouse gas capture and sequestration equipment. So that means we're only talking about equipment that actually captures and then sequesters it. What about equipment that just reduced carbon dioxide or greenhouse gas? That would be a separate category?
Unfortunately, I don't think we are liberated by the statute there. I think the statute uses the phrase and sequesters, and I think the staff is being cautious.
And do we, the definition of sequesters, does sequester mean you put it in the ground and it's released a day later, or does it mean it stays there for 1,000 years?
It doesn't say geologically.
Right.
I mean, you can
so what does sequestered mean, I guess? Sequestered,
I mean, I would leave it to the staff. They will have that interesting job here soon enough.
It'll be based on TCQ, Railroad Commission rules, whatsoever, and...
Right.
Or EPA rules,
acceptable methods of sequestration, which could be making algae.
Right. Yeah, that's why I wondered. Does it mean geologically? So it's not just... A coal plant sequesters geologically. It could be emissions of coal plant go to an algae facility.
And that's an important distinction. If you actually look at some of the other incentives we've worked on, Cyrus, some of those incentives explicitly talk about geologic sequestration, if you remember from last session.
Mm-hmm.
And there was a discussion, shouldn't we allow other forms of sequestration? In one instance, one of the revisions, one of the incentives was narrowly drawn just to geologic sequestration, and the rest of them were more broad. So I believe there's a sound basis to believe that this is going to be all sequestration.
And because we're saying V, it'll be up to the applicant to argue sequestering at an algae is acceptable.
Right, right. And at what percentage?
And at what percentage, okay.
If at all. So, but...
Why are we saying this item is only effective if the UCP adopts a final rule regulation regulating carbon dioxide? Shouldn't we say regulating global warming gases?
Again, I'm open, but the statute effective terminology says that it has to be,
okay,
the trigger
point
is carbon dioxide.
Right. Yeah, and if they regulate
carbon
dioxide.
I don't think that's going to make a difference, but I'm trying to be delicate with the staff, trying to honor the statute. And when it comes to the effective date, I think we kind of have to have a regulation of carbon dioxide to make this part of the statute effective.
Okay, I'm fine with that.
Mike, is your concern on behalf of the staff on the procedural level not expanding the scope of the procedural K-1 catchment?
I'm not concerned at all. I'm just trying to have deference to, I can tell when they implemented this, they're being cautious about the statute used these words. And when it comes to whether or not this is effective, they're going to be really cautious. And the statute used the words carbon dioxide when it said the effective date. So I'm just trying to support that. However, I do have, before we close the discussion and I go to do this at the break, I have one other revision on this issue. Because now that we have a new administration and they've articulated how they're going to go about regulating carbon dioxide, it's a little different. And so instead of saying this item is only, let's look at B16. It says this item is only effect, is only in effect if the EPA adopts a final rule or regulation. They have, EPA has made clear that they are not going to consider carbon dioxide a regulated pollutant until the effective date of that rule, which is going to happen on January 2nd of next year. And so the effective date of the CAFE standards. And so I think to be consistent with the way this is going to happen, the language should now read, this item is only in effect upon the effective date of a US EPA final rule or regulation regulating carbon dioxide as a pollutant. Listen to me. I'm arguing against the applicability of a tax exemption, Don. You have a big smile on your face. But, I mean, to be consistent with the EPA's interpretation of the Clean Air Act, I think that's what we need to say. So the way you would implement that in the three items that we've discussed is, as I just read on B16, on B15F, when the parenthetical says, including carbon dioxide, I would strike if the, and I would say, including carbon dioxide upon the effective date of a US EPA. Strike adopts a. So you'd say, upon the effective date of a US EPA final rule or regulation regulating carbon dioxide as a pollutant. See that language?
And that still implies if, because if they don't do it, they haven't adopted it. So.
That's right. It's got to be effective.
And then B,
and just to close out, and Cyrus, you can comment on this, that exact change that we made to B15F would be the exact same change on the parenthetical of B15B.
Because that was my question.
It's the same language.
Minor has a comment, I believe.
A couple of things. We were just looking at the language that that we think is actually in the statute for on the CO2 gas capture, B16, and we think it actually does say geologically sequestered.
Well, it does. B16 language says geologically?
Right.
Yeah, it does.
That's a big, I think we have to say that.
I agree.
Breaks my heart, but.
You know, I think it's okay to.
Mike, I actually believe the statutory list is more tractable than it's been expressed here. I think subsection L gives TCEQ, and I don't want to get crosswise with the staff on this, because they may have a reason for some of this, and I don't want to do anything that harm, you know, that places an undue burden on them procedurally. But I think subsection L gives some tractability to this list.
Yeah, that's right.
And I think, to me, it's like, okay, we got it. Let's make sense of it.
Mm-hmm. And that's the GHG thing. I mean, we're clearly not walking word by word with the statute when we say greenhouse gas. I mean, we're liberating this provision to say greenhouse gas and carbon dioxide, not just carbon dioxide. So I think, you know, if the committee believes, I think legally that is, I mean, Bob read the language. It's a non-exclusive list. The staff is given the discretion and even, in fact, the direction to fill in the gaps. I would be comfortable with leaving geologic out. And if the committee is supportive, I don't know why we need to tie the hands of, I mean.
We could always recommend that and let the commission decide if they didn't want to include that or not.
I mean, if we're going to have to do this, it'd be nice to have some options.
I'm just for making this make the most sense as possible.
That's a fair, I appreciate your.
That works with, you know, as long as it's sensitive to the staff's, any burdens it might place on staff. That'd be my biggest concern.
And as long as staff is copacetic with it, I'm all for recommending changes to this that make it make sense. And, you know, cryogenic cooling systems used to reduce pollution, but only in certain, you know, if it's reducing pollution, it's going to be eligible for the exemption.
Exactly.
Right?
That's right.
No matter what has been adopted.
That's right. And the carbon dioxide stuff is a little bit of a careful issue, and that's why I put it in parentheticals, because I didn't want to have that one-off issue of when it's effective for carbon, otherwise dilute. I mean, it's effective for pollution.
So you could always go, for things other than carbon dioxide, go to number B18.
And right. Well, I mean, that's why I put a parenthetical that says including carbon dioxide. By saying including carbon dioxide, we're saying, hey, this might have applicability beyond carbon dioxide, but where we're talking about carbon dioxide, that's really only going to happen when carbon dioxide is enough of a pollutant. Because we've got a constitutional issue here. We have to make sure that the pollutant is actually regulated.
Right.
In order to meet the Constitution test.
That's right. That's right. So anyway, I just want to express, you know, some...
I'm going to take geologic out. I'm going to propose, as we propose it to the commission, I'm going to suggest that we have it, say, sequestered.
And I will support you on that.
It's all about sequestering carbon.
My other comment was with, my glasses on, my other comment was with regard to B15C, which is equipment installed to allow the use of catalysts to reduce emissions and fuel or emissions. When we start talking about the fuel, reduce emissions and fuel, then we're kind of, I'm not sure, but potentially talking about the use of a product to reduce emissions, which, and then there's the other, and there's the other phrase, limitation in the act with regard to a service or manufacturing a product that reduces emissions. So I'm just a little bit concerned, just to point it out to the committee, so you all can discuss it, how that plays out and whether that's counter to decisions you've all already discussed.
I don't know what emissions and fuel does for us there.
Well, the statute, what he's basically, he's breaking out 15, and the statute says fuel or emission conversion through the use of catalysts.
I'm sorry.
The statute, that part of the statute, you know, 1131K15, says fuel or emission conversion through the use of catalysts.
Certainly. The only issue would be applying 100% to that.
Right. I think a great point, Minor, and a way to fix that is to add the phrase subject to the limitations contained in, and then we leave it blank and insert the section numbers where we implemented are on the site at the site requirement.
Excuse me, was the term catalyst-based fuel in the original?
It says fuel or emission conversion through the use of catalysts.
So that wasn't actually in the original list, that it's a catalyst-based fuel.
That was the way the staff articulated.
Well, I'm not sure that's a very good articulation.
Does anybody have an example?
I don't know of a catalyst-based fuel. I'm an engineer. Somebody tell me what a catalyst-based fuel is.
Yeah, that's a...
I'm just suggesting, Mike.
Yeah, that's. I think we need to fix that, guys. Reduction of emissions using catalysts, and then take out and just have it use of catalysts to reduce emissions, and then take off the in fuel or emissions at the end.
Okay, say that again, Wayne. What would the change be? The equipment description, the thing in the left column would be what?
The left column would be catalyst systems for reduced emissions.
Yeah, Wayne, I think I see what you're saying. I think what it means is catalyst-based fuel or emissions conversion system.
Yeah, but what's but a catalyst-based fuel? I've never heard of such
not,
a thing.
Catalyst-based isn't, I think it's...
Yeah, it would be catalyst-based systems.
Yes,
yeah.
Catalyst-based systems.
It's an order of the words, but yeah.
And just have it, and not knock the in fuel or emissions off the end, and just have it to reduce emissions.
Catalyst-based systems for emission control?
Well, it says to reduce emissions, that's fine, or... I'm talking about the description on, you know, the third column.
In the
it says equipment installed to allow the use of catalysts.
Got it.
To reduce emissions and then put period there.
Yeah,
And then delete.
Yeah, I agree with that.
I don't think it adds anything to put in fuel. It's all supposed to reduce.
It's the
reduction of emissions.
Because this makes it sound like there's some new kind of fuel that has a catalyst in the fuel.
So why don't we just say in the equipment listing on the left, just say catalyst-based systems? I mean, that's fine. That doesn't have to be any more descriptive than that. The description, that's the benefit of having a description, right?
Yeah.
And then you'd say equipment installed to allow the use of catalysts to reduce emissions, period.
Period.
Miner still made a good point, and again, I'm arguing against the taxpayer here, but to be fair to the process, wouldn't we still want to say subject to the rule that we've created for hydrotreaters?
Unless we put that in the flow chart somehow so that clearly would have to go through that.
Right.
Because the flow chart for B does have that, is there an environmental benefit at the site?
Fuel.
And if we're going to do kind of the same thing that we did in the A process, wouldn't we be putting it through that test?
Aren't they adjusting the flow chart?
A catalyst fuel. Yeah.
Yes, they are adjusting the flow chart. So I'm suggesting that if they're adjusting the flow chart,
is that one of them fancy iPads?
And they're going to make it go through this test about whether it's for the product or for emissions control, that it'll be caught through the flow chart, I would think.
And I guess the reading of the flow chart now on box 5 is they're going to get rid of box 5, right?
I'm on the part B decision flow chart.
And in the Part B decision flow chart, it's we would impose the same rule.
That's what I'm saying.
Yeah, I think that's important.
Yeah, it's box 2.
Yeah, box 2. It wouldn't is there environmental benefit at the site? It would say whatever the language is we came up with, which I can't remember.
I think we recommended both boxes be changed. Did we, Tim?
Again, without reference, I can't remember specifically whether or not both the recommendation was made to revise the boxes, I believe it was, but I couldn't say with 100% certainty. And regardless, the section that the advisory committee recommended to amend was the eligibility portion. So regardless, you would have to meet eligibility requirements in order to receive a positive use determination.
Good, that's a good catch. We can, because the problem with listing something like subject to the limitation is, well, why didn't we list that in every case?
Can I back in real quick?
That's the solution.
I want to remind the public, if you have any comments related to this, anytime during our process, just please approach the podium. And if you haven't filled out a card, then you can do that just for the record. One general item, since we changed equipment to property in the category, I noticed in the description it has equipment all down that list. Do we want to change that to property? All these are not even have equipment in some places. You probably delete some of it and it'd be fine.
What's the suggestion?
1131K18 is the only place that says equipment, from what I can see in the law.
Right.
So you want to change everything else to property? I'm just thinking of a consistency.
Most of the time, also not in K, it says systems, right? Enhanced heat recovery systems.
But it really describes the process. Enhanced, well, sometimes it's property. System. Sometimes, for example, it says methanation. That's the only word.
Methanation.
And the descriptions don't have a whole lot of
something
direct
in high school
binding authority, so... Would everybody like to say property instead of equipment?
I'm going to ride right over that comment, Doug. Glad that wasn't on the record.
Or do you want to say property, equipment, and devices, whatever's in the statute? What's in this? Isn't there three different terms in the statute? I don't remember. There's four?
1131. Property, description, methods, facilities, devices.
Facilities, devices, or methods. Yes, I should have gone to law school. That's great. That's probably what it should say. Okay, so I'm going to do that when I have this little moment to myself with my computer in the descriptions, instead of terms like equipment, where it makes sense.
For example, D1, if you said used to remove, destruct equipment, I think it's still saying the same thing.
I don't want to...
Right, you could strike the reference to and just start with what it does.
Right.
I like that idea. It'll be a lot easier to implement.
Right.
Okay, I'm going to take a shot at that. By the way, last comment, if everybody else is satisfied, when we made that B12 change to kind of make sure, to Wayne's point, that it's post-combustion or post-gasification, a better way, so it's not as long and worked up, that's been proposed is we say property used, if you look at that, we'll say used for handling, storage, or treatment of we just kind of reverse it and say byproducts or co-products produced, open paren, resulting from, close paren, by the combustion or gasification of coal. Such as, and then use the list. It puts it in one sentence to clarify that it's the stuff that we're dealing with is actually produced by the combustion or produced by the gasification. So to repeat, property used for handling, storage, or treatment of byproducts or co-products produced, open paren, resulting from, close paren, by the combustion or gasification of coal, such as boiler and gasifier slag, bottom ash, flue gas desulfurization material, fly ash, and sulfur.
Okay, well, I suggest you revise that, email it, and we'll get a copy of that after lunch, hopefully, and we'll take another look at that.
So back to the flow chart. So did we ever address that or not? Or was there a decision made or not?
I've got one flow chart, not two. Did we get the second flow chart?
Don, there's one there for A and B.
Yeah, that's what I figured out. And
they're both the same, basically.
You get a hold of the A one.
There's the B one.
It's just box two instead of box five. So I guess if we haven't made a decision on
it. I have to bring up something we covered. Why are we having two? Y'all did two at one point, but the legislature kind of said, hey, do this all with one set of decision making on this stuff. Why do we have two flow charts now?
You could collapse them into one flow chart.
I think we believe that's a valid comment.
I think that's,
well, that's noted.
I've been validated. The comment's been validated. Does that mean that, well, we'll find out on the 28th?
I think the intent is, as Tim pointed out, the eligibility criteria govern everything. So they're going to put us through this gauntlet that we've articulated and whatever the rule implements to address the on-site requirement, no matter what. Greg, so we'll see it when we see the rule.
Yeah. Do we need a motion to get this moving?
Yeah, we're going
to
table it.
I think, I don't know. Yeah, we can have a motion to table it until after lunch. That's what I suggest until we have his proposal back.
I move to table it until the first item after lunch.
Second.
All right, we have a motion and a second to table Part B. I believe this is item 3C on the agenda. We'll call a vote. Those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Opposed, no. The motion is tabled until the first item after lunch. No, I think we've already noted, he asked me, do I want to know who voted, basically who's not here, so I think we've already voted, noted that for the meeting, so. All right, we'll go into three, A and B, seems to be kind of go together. So if we'll take that next, I think it's probably logical for Wayne, you had submitted something, you want to go through your suggestion?
Well, I just did a calculation that was based on the main formula they have now with the slight revisions of calling it not byproduct, but
marketable product.
And I just went through a side-by-side calculation comparing a combined cycle plant to a combustion turbine of the same size, and I also sent everybody where I got the gas prices and first cost, you know, first cost and operating cost over EIA data doing that. I don't know what else to say I believe this equation works. There were a couple of issues brought up last time, and one was the rate at which you use, because the original rules say the prime rate, and all of us that do property know that that's not necessarily an appropriate number to use. And I had an idea just sitting down. I'm not sure how you would put it to get a proportional number, but you could probably do a simple test that anything that has a simple payback of less than 10 years is automatically not, you know, assuming it's something like a 30-year deal, is not pollution control. Or maybe it's not 10 years, maybe it's something else. But instead of trying to do a net present value of your income, a simple payback, but then you still have a problem if you have something that's only partial, you need another equation to do a partial.
I appreciate you going to this effort, and I can tell it did take some effort.
I had done a lot of this before for something else, and I just cleaned it up for this. So it's not like I...
My concern is, and this is just me, but it seems to kind of veer into the valuation world a little more than we want to go.
It simply follows that equation that's existing. Believe it or not, you know, coming up with the difference in operating cost, which is more or less what that equation you do. Now, something other than a Hersig might, or you know, would be a little bit of a different different. You know, it wouldn't be necessarily all this detail. It'd be something else, but it'd still use the basic equation. See, all this stuff at the top is just to get to the difference in operating cost.
Mm-hmm.
Or revenue, or however you want to say it, between the two different things. And then it's the box at the bottom using the existing equation or slightly modified, or what the staff had, one of their recommendations for the changes to that existing equation.
And you're basically comparing a combustion turbine, which is a peaking plant,
right,
to a combined cycle, and I see.
Well, see, that's the,
I see different purposes for those two. Of course, the peaking plant is for quick startups during high demand time for power, versus the combined cycle, which is usually a main load plant.
Well, and
Paul or anybody, if I'm talking out of school here, feel free to correct me. But,
well, I mean, that's the only other alternative if you're going to talk about something that uses gas, because nobody has built a steam boiler type plant.
Good point.
Simply because you end up with the same thing as the CTs or combustion turbines with higher cost. So if you weren't going to build the HRSG, the thing you would compare against is CTs. But again, this is just an example of a type of property.
Any other comments, concerns?
You're comparing the entire plant.
Yes.
It's a generation plant.
Yes.
It's production equipment.
Well, that's what it turns out. It's. But there's an argument right now about whether this is production equipment or not. It's before the commission.
I understand. And I understand that.
Okay.
But wouldn't you, on the combustion turbine existing equipment, wouldn't there be a cost for pollution control that should be in there? Or are you just taking the whole plant?
I didn't have a way to put that, get cost for that.
Because that's the idea, right? You have a more efficient combined cycle plant, so there's some NOx benefits to doing it that way, but the HRSG is pretty much production equipment. But the argument is, yes, it's production equipment, but you're getting lower NOx.
You would have more dollars spent on an SCR for the combustion turbines. You'd spend twice that much on the combustion turbines as you would on the other one. Or something around twice. And I, you know, I have a place for doing that. I just didn't have.
You didn't do it here because really you're taking the value of the entire plant.
Well, and I just, that's certainly a calculation to be considered. I was just presenting an example of a way to do it. And again, if you'll notice, I have a place there listed for that number could go in at the top, but the whole thing is I'm all this stuff at the top again is to get down to the existing equation, which I think works.
Did you consider running these numbers? Because you went with option one. They gave us three options. And option one is pretty much the same as the current, just with different language, right?
Right.
But did you look at option two?
Is that the one tell me which one that is.
That's where you take the annual marketable product value minus the annual operating cost old.
I ran that.
I'm just wondering.
I think that's a farce. the calculations that I come up with when I do that are kind of ridiculous.
Well, I was just wondering if you had this example, if you used option two, is the number you came up with negative 63%, or is it some other number?
It's a completely different number.
Can you share the number with us?
I didn't bring it with me. I could probably do that, but I didn't bring it with me.
Is it also a negative number, I guess, is my question.
No.
Is it 50%?
Well,
1%?
I don't, Cyrus, at this point, I don't remember the exact number. I just didn't think it.
I'm not arguing for it. I'm just, if we're looking at different options, I'm just wondering what
You know, like I said, I did it, and it just seemed ridiculous to me that the numbers it was spitting out, it didn't make any sense to what you were looking at. So
this is just, I mean, it's it's hard to figure out what you're measuring here on this.
Well, most of this is just to come down to the difference in operating costs.
And that's the biggest issue is you're measuring operating costs, but how does that equate?
Or excuse me, the difference in income.
Same difference. I mean, yeah.
Well, and then
the difference in the income in this equation is the operating cost, the NOI, right?
Well, yeah, the
turbine itself is, I mean, it's losing money. I mean, basically.
Yeah.
You're in the hole $45 million a year to own this and operate.
Yeah, and that's why you would build a combined cycle, because it's economic, not because it's pollution control.
Well, they build peakers now.
Yes, but you're not going to be running them like you do.
Right. They're not comparable.
That's not comparable. That's a different operation. You get a higher dollar for short run times at peak times. It's a different scenario.
Right, and I think the biggest difference here, looking at it, is based on your heat rate or your efficiency, is what Cyrus was talking
right.
about. And that's what he's alluding to, is the measurement of the operational efficiencies on the fuel. I mean, that's, you were running, what, a 10 here, 9.2 on the heat rate versus a 6.7?
And those are straight out of EIA number
sources, right?
Any other comments?
This just seems like it's a valuation issue when you approach it this way. I mean, as opposed to determining whether it's pollution control. I mean, this may create an income.
Well, again, it's the same equation that's existing. Now, I showed you all the stuff to get to it, but I'm using the existing equation that's in the rules.
Well,
the
existing equation talks about a byproduct.
Byproduct. And my byproduct here is savings, the dollar savings because of the efficiency. The actual language they wanted to change it to says that.
Do you have a copy of that? Option one, where it says marketable product, and it's a definition around that marketable product.
Right, and the marketable product here is additional electricity.
And how does that, I just have a hard time equating that, how that has to do with emissions.
Because they installed a thing for economic reasons, not for pollution control.
No, but
this is the whole thing this equation does.
Well, it clearly has production purpose to some degree.
Well, and apparently the legislature has determined that it has environmental.
No, they said it. They said it had to be considered. It's the non-exclusion list. It does not say that it is automatically pollution control.
Shall adopt rules establish a non-exclusive list of facilities.
Non-exclusive.
Right. But you have to include these items.
Right. No, but that doesn't say that they're pollution control.
Could be removed. There's not an item on that list that the TCQ does not have the authority to remove from that list. And the
So what does must include mean then?
They must include on the list, but it doesn't mean it's automatically pollution control equipment. It means you have to consider it.
It must include it on the initial list that was handed to TCEQ.
There's nothing on there that says that that stuff is automatically pollution control equipment. That's why the V is out there.
Yeah, I think I support, I mean, we've consistently said that it doesn't peg a percentage, but, you know, to be fair to the test, if you want to remove something from that list, it's based on the compelling evidence statement that the commission shall update the list. An item may be removed from this list if the commission finds compelling evidence to support the conclusion that the item does not provide pollution control benefits. So, I mean, I agree the V, we all agreed that the V would be a way for the agency to have the discretion it needs, but I mean, I don't think it's fair to construe the statute to not put some significance to the inclusion of something on the list.
I can see a HRSG if you're reducing pollution but not adding production, I have no problem with it. But this adds production. This doubles the production of a couple of gas turbines.
And I'm not suggesting 100% either. I just see the words must include.
Well, it's must include or consider, yes. But it doesn't say must grant.
But I don't think consider is in contemplating to mean, yeah, we thought about it, no. There's an implication here.
Well, you're saying it automatically says that it's pollution control equipment, and it does not say that.
And the legislature came back and adopted G1 to say again that the standards and methods for making determinations under this section are established in the rules adopted under subsection G, and they apply to what's on subsection K.
Mm-hmm.
So if it was denied before, it's denied now. The legislature's action did not establish the pollution control determination.
All I'm saying is, I might get wrong off base, but when it, L, where it says we have the authority or the commission has the authority to remove things from the list, my interpretation is that those are the discretionary items that may be added on the list that can be removed. But it says it must; these must be included on here. I don't want to chase this too long.
The most important thing, I think, Mr. Chairman, is that the purpose of this committee is to develop, you know, is to give input to the agency about whether the mechanisms they're using to determine what the V should be makes sense. And I think that we are about, you know, we are all about having a debate about whether that equation makes sense. And I think you probably have already gotten a sense. I certainly, your examples show me that we've got a fundamental disagreement within our committee. And, you know, we've been pretty good about agreeing about the stuff that is easy to agree upon, but we got a fundamental disagreement about whether or not we can be significantly discounting exemptions because costs have been decreased or value has increased. Whereas others of us believe that the discounts should occur if you are producing more. Now, your characterization of this is you're producing more power. Well, the rated capacity is the same. They're using less fuel. I mean, we see a pollution
control. This whole thing was started because companies were being asked to spend extra money to do something they wouldn't do otherwise to prevent pollution. That's not what this is. That's this equation says, well, you would have installed this anyway. Why should we be granting a tax exemption just because it happens to reduce pollution, but you did it not because you had an onerous thing to spend money on because of regulation. You did it to make more money. Why should you be get to double dip, if you will? Automatically granting this tax exemption to something that is put in there for economic reasons violates the spirit of what this was originally intended for.
All I'm saying is the legislature spoke, and we can have different interpretations of that. I'm just saying I don't think we can. Clearly, this is not a Part A. This is not Part A. Is yeah, everybody agrees.
I'm not saying that we need to put zero on the on that list. I just had an example here, and I think the equation works. The existing equation works. I'm not saying that we take something off that list or automatically put zero on it. That's not what I'm saying.
Okay.
So if that's what you were thinking, that's not at all what I was intending here.
In your equation, though, do you calculate or treat as the byproduct the extra electricity that's generated?
Yes.
And so does that speak to the suggestion from staff that we consider using marketable product?
That's the definition of the one I was using when I...
Yeah, that's the way I read it. I read what you've done. I think that makes sense. I think the goal of this has always been, going back to when the formula was first developed, was to figure out a way, the best way possible, to divide productive property from non-productive pollution control property. To the extent that any facility is required to spend and have stuff, equipment, whatever, that is not producing for them, not producing goods and services, but controlling pollution, we want that identified and identified to the appraisal districts.
See, not taxed. I like the test is if you took this out, your production goes away, or half of it goes away. So to me, that tells me this is an integral part of production equipment in this particular example. Whereas if I had a baghouse on a coal plant, that's not production equipment. That's purely pollution control. If I have an SCR on any kind of gas burn engine, that's purely pollution control. If I have a...
Yeah, but you're talking about 100% pollution control equipment. This is partial. If you took that baghouse away from that plant, it's not going to operate either. You wouldn't be permitted to operate.
But you wouldn't be permitted to operate, but the plant can operate. Okay, not legally, but it can. This one, you take it out, you cut it, it can no longer operate.
No, if you took they have bypasses on these, and you can run them without.
Yeah, you're just running the gas turbines. You're no longer producing electricity from.
Well, you are. You have the generator.
It's just not off the.
You have a different capacity. It's just a different capacity. You're back to this part of your equation.
Right. So this is integral to the half the capacity of the plant.
It has both benefits: production and pollution.
But the degree, and we think that, or my personal opinion in this particular case, the production degree is so outweighs the pollution that, like I said, they were building these, people were building these 25, 30 years ago. There was no pollution requirement. This is before the 1994 law was passed. They were producing them. I don't see why you would grant it now if it was standard practice. And that's what this equation shows, is that the economic benefit is something you would have done anyway. It's not, there is no specific law that says you must put in a HRSG.
Do you have a alternative equation that you think works?
I was about to suggest that. He just leaned over to me a few minutes ago. If I could suggest an early lunch, I think he wants to tweak his a little bit.
Well, I want to tweak it, but also it's going to be discussion, which will probably take us. So why don't we just discuss it after lunch where we can just devote time to it.
And Mike needs time to change his Part B. Do we need a little bit more time than usual? Can we? Can we do it? If we get back by 12:30, is that enough time?
Can I once again ask the question, Wayne? Why does option two not work, which seems to be a ratio of the old versus the new, looking at, so in this case it would be electricity sold minus the old operating costs, kind of over electricity sold over the new operating costs. When I do my calculation in my head, it comes to about 5%, you know, maybe 5-6%. I don't really know how to do interest rate factors, so I may be doing it wrong.
Well, but, and maybe if you, that may have worked with a different interest rate. I was using the one I used for this, and it was, and like I said, I don't remember what the answer was, but it was sort of ridiculous.
Mm-hmm. Okay, maybe it just depends on the interest rates and the years you do it.
Yeah, you use the cost of capital on this. That's
right. And
that would be typical valuation.
And I may have to go back to that and try the other, like prime rate or something, and see what that does. That might make sense then. I didn't try that.
All right. I think we need a motion to recess until 12:30. Is that okay?
Sure, I'll move that.
All right, second. We got a second. Okay, those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. We'll recess until 12:30.
When all those applications, the 35 applications that came in for the first time, what was the range of percentages
They suggested 100% and about 60%, and some of them even included.
That we'll have we don't have to have a vote yet, but we start our discussion.
Where is your office?
I'm right up.
So
you can email it. Do you think we should wait? It's a bit selfish, but I'd like to get out of here at 2:30. I've got something tonight I need to be at, but
yeah, and some of us have a long way to drive home. But
Wayne, how long's your drive? It's about 3 for me, too. All right, I think we are back in session. I don't know if we need a motion to come back from recess or not. I don't think we do.
DAT.
So it is 12:40.
That's for the Saints. Who dat? No. This is a Tier 3 calculation, just basically a very straightforward and simplistic look, and basically the first line on there, the adjusted emissions new, is basically getting it to apples to what you're comparing it to. So if you have emissions, you take the capacity of the existing component or the benchmarking, what do we say here, equipment, process, or method, and you want to normalize it to make sure that you're looking at, you're getting a true comparison between the two as far as your emissions of what you would produce once you have the new emissions, times this calculation here, the old divided by the new, it gives you an adjusted emissions so that it's benchmarked against the old. And then the next line item is you just take your new emissions divided by your old emissions output, minus that from one, and that gives you a percent exempt. So if you had 100 tons of NOx per year new and your old one was 200 tons, and you would, they would give you a calculation of a 50% or whatever it was, but it would be on apples to apples comparison.
Yeah, I feel obligated to ask, and we haven't prepared this, by the way, at all. Is this, you said it's simplistic, is it overly simplistic to the point of being too favorable to applicants, or?
I think it's just factual of what it is. I mean, I don't think it favors anybody. It just depends on the facts and the equipment itself, and what it does.
So this takes cost out of the equation and cap.
Well, the cost would be whatever the cost of the new equipment is. You just, that would be the percent exempt. You could put that. Right, you could put an additional formula in there to say that here's the cost of
the equipment.
Let
me ask you, in the case of a HRSG and you have design capacity old and design capacity new, your old capacity is zero.
It would depend on your benchmark. If you're benching it against a gas turbine, and your capacity is the same, then it, there is no, then you look at
that's,
the emissions.
That's a separate argument than what you were making when I was.
Yeah, I mean, what you look at would be the emissions output of a gas turbine generator, if that's your benchmark, and your emissions output of this combined cycle, and whatever the difference in those emissions outputs would be is what they are. So if the gas turbine had 500 tons per year of NOx output, and this one produced 300 tons of NOx output for the same capacity, then that would be your percent exempt. I don't know. We could try to. Can you? Anybody want to put it into Wayne's deal? What it would come out to be?
Well, it comes out 100% right off the bat. Yeah.
Hold on.
Oh no, it wouldn't be 100%. It would be the improved emission performance of the combined cycle.
Yeah, Wayne, I think if you look at it this way, you've got your production, old and new, are the same, 400 megawatts, right? And if you look at your fuel quantity, generation fuel quantity, that's going to be directly proportional to your emissions, so you use that number. And if you plug those numbers into this equation...
No, you're...
Hold on, we'll hear what he says first.
Well, if you plug those numbers in, you end up getting 27%.
That works for me.
Matt, want to walk through that right quick?
Yeah, I was going to ask Wayne this, I guess, line item Q, generation fuel quantity.
That's well, no. The emissions new for HRSG is zero. So your second equation, the adjusted emissions new, is going to be zero over emissions old.
Well, you still have a combustion process. I don't think your emissions would be zero. Is that correct?
Oh, I see what you're saying. Okay. Yeah. You're doing whole plant as opposed to...
Well, I mean, that's where your calc is.
Yeah.
Looking at that, and it does it. I'm just looking at it, doing the math.
I mean, using the example that you've given with these numbers, you end up with a 27%.
If you assume the fuel mix is going to correspond to the emissions, because it's going to depend on your controls, et cetera.
Yeah, roughly speaking, it's going to be pretty close.
We had the same discussion years and years ago, right, about whether you should base something on the actual performance or the cost. right? Because we talked about if somebody comes in with a process and says, I reduced my emissions by 80%, does that mean the tax exemption you get should be an 80% exemption because you're 80% cleaner? And I think our answer back then was no, because there's just, it's what we're trying to do is exempt the property that is used for pollution control equipment, not exempt property based upon the environmental performance, which would be a different law, right? The intent of this law was to exempt property that's used for environmental benefit to meet or exceed a rule regulation. It wasn't a rule to create incentives for better environmental performance. So I would argue against this calculation just because it seems it's not based on cost or the value of the property, is based on your environmental performance, which I don't think is what the law says. Even though I might think this is a good thing to do, it's not. The law is about exempting the percentage of the property that is intended for pollution control, not whether or not that property produces a certain performance.
Well, I mean, it goes to the fact that it reduces from an existing source. I don't follow you, I guess.
In other words, we have a pollution law, not an efficiency law.
I see it as if X percentage of your property reduces your pollution by 10%, it's the same exempt status as if it reduced it by 70%. It's the X percentage we're trying to get to, not the percentage of reduction. The property is entitled to the exemption based upon its characteristics, not the efficiency of its characteristics. I don't know if that I'm looking at you and I can tell it's not helpful.
In other words, if you
I'm just looking at it simplistically, just saying that if something reduces pollution, isn't that what we're after here?
Exactly, but your calculation is going to be based upon the emissions values. So you might have two pieces of equipment and both are designed to, you know, meet certain NOx emissions. Let's say one is more efficient than another and reduces it by 90% and the other reduces it by 50%. That piece of equipment that reduces it by 90% shouldn't get 40% more than the other piece of equipment if they're both meeting the rules. See what I'm saying?
No, I think I do. But I mean, I guess it depends. I guess we're trying to tie that back to that example right there. I mean, I haven't really put any thought in this formula against his example. That was, it's just basically if you have so much NOx output or SOx output or whatever it is, PPM, and you're reducing it, you know, the differential is the benefit for pollution control, right? I mean, that's, you once producing 100, now you're producing 50. And that investment, you know, now if you're required, you know, that's, this is, you know, basically just the skeleton. I mean, I'm sure there's things that you'd have to put around this. I didn't put a lot of thought into defining the definition or giving definitions to, or defining what the characteristics in detail behind this, but this was just the basic structure. That's all I was doing. I mean, if you want to add language around this, you know, to tie it down in certain areas, I haven't gone that far with it. I think that's the discussion point.
I guess what I'm saying is it's a dangerous path to calculate property tax breaks or exemptions based upon the amount of emissions reduction. I think you're going to have, I don't know, I just think it's going to be...
Tier one, what is a tier one measure?
A tier one is saying 100% of that equipment is designed to meet an environmental rule. It's not saying it's going to reduce emissions by 100% or 50% or 10%. It's based upon the intent of that pollution equipment.
So like an SCR.
An SCR, you still have emissions at the end of the day, but you're putting it in there, maybe I'm wrong on that, you're putting it in there to, you're not giving it 100% because it reduces emissions by 100%, you're giving it 100% because the whole intent of that equipment is designed to reduce, prevent emissions.
And some equipment is not, its sole intent is not for pollution reduction, some of it is economics. That's what we're trying to separate.
Well, yeah, but this has nothing to do with economics.
Well, that's why it's wrong.
It just has to. I don't understand that because, I mean, I don't care about the economics. All I care about is if you're producing pollution and now you're not because you installed a piece of equipment, tell me how that's wrong.
But Greg, if you're emitting 100 units of pollution, and the rule says you can only emit 90. And so you put in a property to reduce you to 90. 100% of your property that you put in is tax exempt, not 10%. You reduce your emissions only 10%.
But then if you're producing 90 or 100 and you reduce it to 90, then you get a 10% exemption.
Well, but that would be a tier 2 or a tier 1 application.
If it was 100, but this calculation, you only reduce it 10%, you're only getting 10%.
The example here would be, you've got a plant that produces 100 tons of emissions, you have to meet 90 and you have two choices. You can either put in a scrubber or something to get you to 90, or you can redesign your plant and use a Herzog and maybe get to 50, but you're also going to have some increased efficiency in production. And so what you're trying to do is figure out the cost differential between...
Yeah, but if I have a capacity increase, it would be normalized in this first part. So if you had increased production, you'd normalize it in the first part of the equation, and you would take that out because it would reduce your NOx benefit by the production curve in the first part of the equation. It would normalize that, so you wouldn't have an increased production. It would discount your NOx output or increase your NOx output or whatever the calculation or emission is by that point so that you would get rid of all that. And I wouldn't give it 100%. If you went from 110 to 100 or whatever that calc you said, it'd be 10% based on this. You'd have a 10% exemption. You wouldn't get 100%.
Well, I think that this Tier 3, and I know the chairman had a comment, but just the you don't go here unless the equipment that was applied for had a productive value. I mean, if it doesn't have a productive value, if it's an SCR, it goes to Tier 1. You never get here. And I think the program and statute works like that. It's only the commission's been given the difficult job of when there is productive value, how do you calculate the difference. This methodology says you can normalize production benefits, in other words, by reducing, rather than give them a straight out percentage on reduced emissions, normalize that by how much production increase you get. It's a way of correcting to produce a more fair result. I was kind of being glib earlier when I said 27% sounds good. I think that's an indication that in a difficult set of facts, it wouldn't give 100%. It wouldn't give us this strange negative determination. It would take it up and give it what would probably be a pretty conservative exemption of 27%.
I don't really want to comment on this anymore because what I'd like to do is go home and run numbers on this and one that Cyrus said I didn't run enough numbers on and... see if I'm comfortable with it.
We keep relaying this to the HRSGs. I didn't intend this to be toward HRSGs or toward anything else.
Well, neither did I mine. That was just the example I used.
I'm just trying to think of something that would be all-encompassing for something that, for all the unknowns into the future that we don't know, that would be based on facts of the individual pieces of property or equipment, and that stuff that... you know, based on the output or the emissions of the, or the sources of those emissions, that, that the TCEQ could wrap their arms around and say, here's what we know, here's what we don't know, we need more detail or more information, and it would be factual based. It wouldn't be valuation or subjective or, you know, prime rate or cost of capital. It would be just, and it would tie directly to the equipment or the property in question. And, you know, I didn't tie down old or anything like that because I think, as you state, that that's very subjective, and that would be something that, you know, these guys could ask questions on, where are you getting your basis or where are you getting your benchmark, or if you've got a piece of existing equipment out there and you've actually replaced it with something, then you have facts on both sides. You have facts of the new equipment, facts of the old equipment, emissions of the old, emissions of the new. It's a pretty simple calc. That's what I said. It's so simple. It's...
Yeah, and like again, I'll say that I want to sit down and run a bunch of numbers to see if I'm comfortable with it or not. I can't just sit here and...
No, I understand. I agree.
I thank you for putting something on the table, though. This is helpful.
In what you're proposing... And, for instance, a Herzig may have, you might be able to slap, I'm going to be ridiculous, you might be able to slap six SCRs on a Herzig. Would there be some normalization with regard to, with no pollution control equipment? Because that pollution control equipment is 100% anyway. It's classic pollution control equipment. Would there be some way to normalize that so you're looking at the actual equipment versus add-on things that might not have been part of the cost or the
I understand. I mean I think Wayne brought that up, is, you know, again, you're going to have certain givens that you're going to have to measure or agree to, and what Wayne was saying is, in the Herzig, your fuel base is hot air, so that has zero output at a certain level or temp. So your emissions there is automatically zero, so you have zero to begin with. So the equipment actually doesn't pollute, what does it do? But it's the source to do the same thing or displace a fossil fuel. So I think, but does the level of your displacement 100%? Not necessarily so. I think his calc, whatever he came up with, the 27%, just a back of the envelope, it sounds like, you know, is that reasonable? I don't know. I haven't really put my arms around it in that calc.
Well, it's a lot more reasonable than 100%, but
will this work in structure for everything out there?
And here's another thing too. And again, the Herzig is the worst, the most complicated example there is, but I want to point out something that's even more convoluted, as much as more than just what you think it does, because some of the applications that went in on some of these Herzigs were not just the Herzig. They included the steam turbines and the generators and the whole bit. And...
because that's on the list. I'm sure that's why.
They tried to get the steam turbines, not just the Herzig, and the generators exempted, along with the, yes. You didn't know that, so.
Not just the steamer, but the generator associated.
Yeah.
I don't know if we can address every situation.
But I'm
aware of Tier 3, according to TCEQ about a month ago, I asked for the stats, and about 11% of the total applications is Tier 3. So, and I'm not minimizing Tier 3 at all in this calculation process, but I think the last meeting or the one before, we were trying to determine, okay, which major pieces of at least 11% are we trying to target? What are we, I don't know if we can address every possible situation. But I guess my question is, would this handle 90% of our situations? Would it?
Well, I think there's a problem with this equation, and that's one of the reasons I want to run the numbers. That there may be something that I think ought to be 60 or 70%, and I don't think you'll ever get there with this based on his calculation.
Well, the problem is, well, the issue is with this calculation.
It's simpler, yes.
It's a simple calculation, and it's not a cookie-cutter calculation. You just can't take this and say, this is it, because it depends on the facts and the equipment involved. And that reason for a Tier 3 is there's got to be judgment in it. As long as there's a structure or basis for that judgment to be placed, then this would do it and still give leeway for the independent thought or the uniqueness of the equipment.
But one of the reasons I want to run numbers is I think this may actually, in some cases, limit the exemption where it shouldn't. But like I said, I have to run the numbers to see. So
yeah, I mean, I can do that with you. I mean, we can get together on that and look at it.
I think it would be interesting as an example. One of the things on the K list is an ultra supercritical pulverized coal boiler, right? You know, Luminant has had through the years a number of different technologies they've proposed for coal plants. So there are two ways to do the calculation. One is based on the emissions. What better emission rate are you going to get because you're using ultra supercritical versus critical or supercritical versus using more of a cost basis? And it might be interesting to look at something like that, you know, as an example, because clearly the legislature, they wanted to promote cleaner technologies for coal. They put fluidized, but you know, they put a number of things in there. And so I said I think it's dangerous to go down this emissions road, but it'd be interesting to take a few of those examples and say, if we did emissions versus cost, what would the difference, what would it come out looking like?
Yeah, because you can't ignore the fact that so many of those technologies really derive their environmental benefit from efficiency. Ultra supercritical, fluidized bed.
Mm-hmm.
And so there's something there.
Gasification.
I got to tell you what's going on in the back of my mind is, I don't know if we can decide this today, but today is when we do need to submit something, if it's going to be, well, again, we got a little bit of time, but preferably it's today if we have something. So we're scheduled to meet again June 4th. Is that a possibility that it be considered? Of course, you're going to, the staff is going to, or the executive director is going to issue their draft rules May 28th. And now's the time to weigh in on that before it's published, is what I'm saying.
I do have, since we've pretty much opposed every coal plant permit there is, I do have emission rates for the different coal plants that have been proposed over the last few years and their technology that I could share. But what I won't have is I won't have any data on what the cost of those equipment will be, because those aren't in the air permits. But from our lawyers, I can get all that.
We could probably figure that out.
You can.
So are you suggesting compare this formula to option one, which is the current? Or option two is the current, right? I'm getting confused. Three is the current one?
Three is current, but option one is really the same as three, but okay, just updated.
This one gets the current.
The one that's in.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, the ones that's.
Yeah, I can share what I have with folks, but I don't know if I'm going to be able to run these calculations. And if Mike, if you can do the same.
Well, I mean, like I said, I have that as a model for at least for the existing one, and I could do the other one, but I'd need the data that, which would also include the operating, the L&M cost, as well as the
It's hard to calculate O&M costs for plants that have never been built before.
Yeah.
and hopefully we're proposing to compare these two to see if it's, which one's logical.
I would think so.
The most logical. I mean, are you comparing to see what the results would be? Or
you can see what the results would be to see if we like the equation.
If it's too much exemption, not enough exemption?
If it looks reasonable.
Well, I think it's more of a case, like in the super critical example, it's more of a case, does it make sense to base it upon environmental performance, emissions reduced, or upon the extra cost that the applicant is bearing to get those emissions?
Yeah, if you've got that, Cyrus, I'll try to run some calcs, because you have what, I guess, the technology differences and then the performance differences.
Yeah.
And I'll see if I can. Like I said, this is the basic structure. This is the basic structure, mm-hmm. And I didn't, you know, because every situation is unique. Then is there a bolt on that I need to put onto this to try to tighten it up in any particular arena? I'm not sure, but you know, if it's basic enough and it can fit, and then you can add detail around it for the particular case that you're working on, then, you know, so be it. But it's, you know, that's something the TCQ and the taxpayer and everybody else has to agree on. But this is just a basic structure. If you get that, I'll start working on it the same as Wayne.
Mm-hmm.
And this is, you know, the timing of this equation change would be critical because, I mean, the thought behind 3732 is we're entering into an age where efficiency will be our only remaining pollution control technological advancement in many cases. We can, and you know, if I'm going to say a really bad word, but if we actually start having to engage in BACT on greenhouse gases, efficiency is going to be kind of the central component of the early days of that BACT. And so, you know, we need to make sure we have an equation that doesn't punish somebody who chooses to take a product that or take an approach that's more efficient, especially when it's an unproven technology. I mean, it's easy to calculate, Wayne, for example, oh, well, you're going to get an additional, you know, you're going to get your money out of that. You made an economic decision when you chose that more efficient technology. Well, that sure as heck is not true on an ultra supercritical pulverized coal boiler, you know, that's never been deployed before. You know, it's you know, I can tell you that I have clients that are scared about whether they actually can maintain those pressures and not, you know, deteriorate the boiler. And so they might choose a supercritical unit as opposed to an ultra supercritical unit because of its unproven nature. But if you took a paper analysis of it, it's more efficient. So you might actually discount their exemption using kind of what you've said. And I understand your arguments, Wayne. I'm just saying that this is a good dialogue for us to be having because we're going to be pushing the envelope on technologies where we're asking people to go places they've never gone on efficiency, and we can't just assume that their decision-making is economic. If their decision-making was economic, they wouldn't do it.
Something brand new is one thing, and something that somebody's been building that way for 30 years is another.
And that's a fair comment. That's a fair comment.
My concern is how do you distinguish in situations, you know, in where someone's just putting in a new production unit and they're using the most efficient, best thing to put in versus a situation where we've made someone retrofit to a new, more efficient process?
I think the inquiry that would be good, Don, and maybe we can put something around it in this regulatory language would be if in either case the technology that's being deployed is actually a proven with years of O&M expense assigned to it type of technology. I mean, I think those were two fundamentally different situations. Whether it's in a retrofit or a new, calling it the state of the art, it still may be untested in terms of years in service. And so that, I mean, we just need to make sure we watch for that issue. And that's why I like the idea of focusing on emission performance and then figure out whatever protective measures we need to put in if we're concerned about abuse. If we're concerned about bad outcomes like you've identified.
I had qualms about the first formula we came up with many, many years ago, but it seemed the best sausage we could put together at the time. And I'm looking at the other proposals, and besides for those that refine that original one, I can't find a way to think they really work much better. And so I'm hesitant to want to think we should go away from what has worked and been used for, you know, for nearly, I guess not a decade, but headed towards that number. And so I was wondering, what do we want to cure? What's the problem we want to cure by going away from the existing cap formula?
As I see it, technologies have changed significantly in 10 years. And I think that's a big reason for changing this. The formula was prepared, and I might be stepping outside here, but the formula was prepared at the time, new technology based on old technology then. And we've kind of gone a significant step forward, and that's why we need to rethink it, I think.
Well, I mean, it's also, it's what we discussed last time. I mean, the current formula, depending on the economics and what's going on, can change that formula or change the output for the outcome of that, depending on year to year. I mean, if you use a 3% prime rate or a 15%, or use a 30-year or 10-year, are you tax affected or you don't tax affected?
Tied with a commodity byproduct, et cetera.
Then okay. You get it. It's very.
You've got lots of reasons to be.
And so I was just trying to get something that says, you know what? This is on the performance of the equipment. You know, whatever it is. Now, does it tie it down to a particular? No, not at this point, because we don't. There's so many unknowns right now. But it gives flexibility to change with the times, and it also gives the TCQ the flexibility to have judgment. And they're going to have, because they do this 24/7. I mean, they're going to have all the latest facts on requirements. That, you know, best available at the limits, whatever what Cyrus was talking about, 90 versus 100 in those limits and how you get to that. I just think it gives the flexibility that it makes everything tight, and it goes back to what's going on with that equipment.
Maybe this is just the engineer in me, but I feel like this equation is just much more black and white. I think it's a lot more intuitive as far as it's not dependent on year after year value of products, prime rates, all these different things. It's very much emissions reduction.
Would it be appropriate or possible to ask the staff to pick some examples and run them?
That's fair.
And I'd be interested in, you know, what if we've been doing this, if we did this to stuff we've been doing things for the last, you know, 5 years, what would we be getting?
I would go a step further and say, would it be appropriate to ask for the impressions of this now, since we're
yeah, both. I'd be interested
here.
In both.
Okay. Sure.
And these are only first blush impressions, to say the least. and just to fuel the discussion of the committee also. and sincerely, not to be meant as staff opinions on this.
This is minor's opinion only, right?
I think that's what they're hearing. I guess my question is, the statute seems to require that for properties that are both tier three and both have a pollution control aspect and a production aspect, that we consider how much of that is pollution control. So how much is pollution control versus production? So I guess that's my first question. I'll leave that one right there. Simpler is better. something that the staff can use and is simple is wonderful. But I think the first one, in context of the statutory requirements, that the decision that the commission has to make is really the one that is frankly most on my mind. Let me mention something else. There are, this is not really a very good example, but for instance, automobiles are now 100% cleaner than they used to be. Not that there's a statutory prohibition from us considering automobiles for Prop 2 program, so it's not a great example, but you plug 100% improvement and pollution control into just a pollution control, and then you get 100%. And then you're not considering any of the production aspects associated with that, which it seems to me that that statute seems to require the commission to make some determination. Some determination of.
Good point. We had an exact example of this because the airport tugs. Right? The airport tugs issue? Where they had diesel powered tugs, you know, that pushed the airplanes around. And we said, hey, you got to reduce your emissions at the airport. And so they said, okay, we're going to replace all of our diesel tugs with electric tugs. And our new electric tugs are 100% exempt. And we worked through that and we said no. But it's 100% reduction in emissions.
I don't think it's that. I mean, yeah, you could take it. But I think it gets back to Wayne's point that he brought up, I guess, two meetings ago as well. Somebody's producing electricity somewhere. So you're just displacing it from at that local right there to somewhere else. And that's what Wayne's point was. And how do you get around that? Or how do you not get around it? How do you account for that in those tugs?
But at the time we said, you know, wait a second. This can't be 100% exempt. It's you're using it to push your airplanes around. There's obviously production value there. And I think didn't we wind up exempting the delta between electric tugs and diesel tugs? So it was based on the cost of the electric tugs versus the diesel tugs. And I think that gets right to the intent of the statute, which is if you're having to do things to meet environmental regs, we don't tax you more. You know, if we make you buy electric tugs that cost $100 per unit, we don't tax you at $100 per unit if you were being taxed at $80 per unit before.
But did that example fit into a Tier 3, or was that a Tier 2? See, I don't think that fit into a Tier 3.
Behind you, Dick, you worked on it.
Done as a Tier 3, and part of the basis was because of downtime, because of charging motors and all that, you had to buy two electric tugs for every one diesel tug. Mm-hmm. And the calculation was based on
So what if electric tugs were cheaper than the diesel tugs, but you're required to buy it to replace it? It seems like you wouldn't get any exemption in that case.
Situation dictates. That's everything's going to have outside the box.
We can't remove all judgment, I guess.
That's just my whole point is if you're the law tells you to do something and you're and it's something you should have done anyway, but for economic reasons, why would you also get a tax exemption? The tax exemption was there to reduce or remove a burden. And
I guess on the tug example, were they required to change out that fleet?
They were required to reduce their emissions is the way I remember it. It's part of the SIP for air compliance, and so everyone in the DFW area scrounges around finding everything they can to do that will reduce emissions.
But wasn't the tug, guys, wasn't the tug part of the control strategy, though? I mean, wasn't it like a delineated control strategy in the DFW SIP? I mean, and that's a difference. The way to respond in part to what Miner said, which is really good to be watchful of what the statute says, I mean, the commission is to distinguish between property that produces and property that prevents pollution, and I think you do that with your tiers. I don't necessarily see it as a constraining factor once you go into the place where you've categorized things that have a production benefit of whether you're going to give them some pollution credit. I think the commission satisfies the statutory criteria by simply distinguishing that, you know, when something actually has a productive value, we're going to put it over here and we're going to take a much harder look at it. I think you have a lot of flexibility once you're there.
And I think that's a benefit of this committee and the brainstorming and comparisons we can do, is that I think you can survive in coming up with what you all recommend should be the methodology for dealing with that component. But you've already satisfied the statute just by distinguishing between properties that pollute, produce.
And Don, you know, just not knowing anything about these tugs, you know, yes, the tug, individual tug may have gone from whatever it's polluting to zero, but the fleet overall may not have gone from what it was to zero to get below that overall picture of what they were trying to achieve. And so maybe the emission is the overall picture of what they reduced it, not the individual component. Does that make sense?
Well,
in that way you would give a this formula would fit, because you'd say, here's the emission limit. We were here, we're here now, and this is what we did. So that percent exemption is just for the individual components of how you, I don't know, that's what I'm saying. It's loose enough to where you can...
If what you're saying makes sense to me, then it doesn't really make sense. And that's what I'm saying, is that I don't see how it you'd look at beyond that that property owner's emissions for that property. If you're doing this percentage, if you're going to base your exemption on a reduction and a percentage reduction in emissions, wouldn't you have to only be looking at that property owner's emissions from that property and analogous and that analogous property?
Not unless you're trying to choose a technology. That's like what Mike was saying. I mean, if you're going to, I can put this technology in, or I can put this technology in, this one's not proven, then I think that gets back to what's in the future that we don't know. I don't think this says, it doesn't, there's enough leeway in it that, no pun intended, that you can add to this equation. This is just a basic structure. So in that situation with the tugs, that would be a good example to use to see how it would fit in this equation, if we could get that information, maybe to give that as an example.
You should have that, I would think.
I'm going to look at staff over here. Unfortunately, I don't think we have any emissions data for, or could we get that?
Never mind, Don.
Another staff, Paul Issue and the presentation. Continental came in and did a presentation for us.
Yeah.
All the members we had were caught.
We had airlines coming in and talking to
Getting back to the Herzog example, in those 35 or so applications that the agency had where you had different methodology, didn't you have some electric utilities do the emissions argument and base calculations based on emissions reductions from using Herzogs, or was it all based on cost?
I believe there were some emission reductions.
Nox avoidance. Is that something you can share with the committee to say how did those numbers come out when they?
Yes, we can definitely.
Cyrus also mentioned earlier that this was talked about years ago, this type of option. Does staff recall why this wasn't chosen, or maybe Don has insight on it?
We really didn't. I mean, it's what Cyrus said. We really didn't feel that the percentage reduction was relevant to the purpose of the statute, and that 100% of pollution control equipment should be exempt, whether that equipment is reducing emissions 10%, 20%, 30%, 40%. 100% of that, and I know...
Which works.
That'd be a tier one.
Tier one.
But you're saying if you put it in a tier three, it'd be understated.
The purpose of tier three was to determine what portion of a mixed property is tier one.
If it's mixed.
Yes.
I accept that premise. I just, if it's mixed, or if it's tricky, I mean, if it's obvious what the portion is, there's tier two.
Well, that's right. But,
well, yeah, I mean,
but this actually, I mean, remember, this can't, we were dealing with examples at the time of which there isn't really a mix of two types of property. It was, we were dealing with the time, the example I've constantly used then and remember from then is, hey, we're no longer putting scrubbers on top of, or filters on top of smokestacks. We're doing electric boilers. We're doing things that don't need smokestacks. And they replace the entire process, right, from a smoking process to a non-smoking process. Mm-hmm. And so the question was, well, how do we, you know, there was an argument to be made by some were making the argument that's 100% exempt now. And we've done away with the emissions, they said. And we said, no, you're still using it to produce good and service. So it's got to be a mix. And so we came to this, okay, what would you have spent if you were still going to pollute?
And this is simply taking the same recognition that there will be situations that won't be easy to call out under Tier 1 and divide up easily under Tier 2, and you'll still be stuck with the same problem we've always had, which is this mix. But that very example of not having a smokestack anymore, you can use, and I think we can do this by doing some homework and coming back and talking about it next time, but if you can use this equation to create a fair system for that type of situation, whereas other equations may actually generate an unfair result. And we just have to look at the examples and see.
Then I agree with that, and I agree to taking a look at that. I remain concerned, though I'm open-minded to look at examples and get over this concern, because as we've said, the old formula is not perfect. And I never felt it was perfect. It was just down to we had to have something. And if we can come up with something now that has some works and isn't perfect and doesn't work in every situation perfectly, but in general is better, then I'm for that. But I remain concerned just about, in theory, this idea that if I got a $100 million worth of equipment and I have to put another $100 million on it to get a 10% reduction to meet regulation, ought to be 50% of that entire thing exempt, not 10%. I should get, if now I'm $200 million of total equipment, and half of that ought to be exempt, not 10% exempt, even though putting it on only reduced my emissions 10%. Is that clear at all?
Yeah, it can go either way. That's what you're saying.
Yeah, I think it can go either way. I'm concerned about it either way. In the end,
yep. Now you could also look at that. If I put an existing identical unit, then my emissions would go up 200%, and now they're only going up 110%, or an extra 10%. I mean, that's what I'm saying. There's different ways you can look at it and say that, yeah, it's maybe not 50%, and it's not 10%. Maybe it's 65% or 45%. You know, toward the new equipment.
And your statement raises a whole other issue of which I am trying to wrestle in my head about, which is this idea of economic expansion and which avenue of economic expansion we're going on. And whether, you know, because that is different to me somehow than retrofitting current economic activity.
I have the same concerns too. I mean, and that's why I'm saying it's the formula right now, the way it sits, it doesn't address that, because I don't know what that would be, but it's enough there that it makes you think about those things, and maybe you could have two, maybe three different answers structurally that you could come out with, but those guys are going to say reason to say that, yeah, this doesn't apply and this one doesn't apply, or we think that this is the best way to apply this formula in this case, and this is what we're going to recommend, and this is what we're going to buy off on. Now, if the taxpayer or the jurisdiction doesn't agree, they have that right, but, you know, is it perfect? no, but I think it gives you a more, it gives you a single answer better than the existing one.
Well, I think we need to get to some examples. I mean,
it sounds like we're to the point where we need to table this until next time. We don't have a motion on the table, so I don't know if we need to have a formal.
How about a motion to table until we have a chance to look at it until next meeting? Table it until next meeting.
Is it appropriate to amend the motion to ask the staff to run us a table of examples?
And let us work with those examples. They work with them. Wayne and I can work with them and see what we come up with.
I'm especially interested in how it would have applied. I mean, I'm interested in how it applies to some future stuff that you guys have a better feel for than I do. But I'd like to see how it would apply to some of the past stuff as well.
And especially some of the more controversial ones.
Yeah.
Sure.
I've
found it in the past when they pick, they know how to go in and pick some good examples that get to the hearts of the issues, and I kind of trust them on that.
And I don't think you had a motion on the table, so I think you can just make a motion, Don.
Well, he was moving, and I was trying to wrap it into one big motion.
Good. I mean, I don't think there's a motion to table, so I think you should just make a motion to instruct staff, whatever you want to instruct staff.
Unless he wants to withdraw his motion.
I'll withdraw my motion. Y'all can have whatever you want.
Okay. All right. Okay, Don, do you want to present them?
Yeah, I think the staff needs to tell us whether they understand what we're asking.
We will try to do what you ask us to do, but I'm not sure that we have the data to be able to put together examples. I mean, it's something we're going to have to discuss, but I'm just not sure we have data that we can put together that's going to talk about old emissions from a technology versus new emissions from a technology. Not sure we have that information.
Can you give us examples of tier three calculations you've done in the past and run this same calculation against them?
The problem is that we haven't asked for emissions data. We haven't based our calculations on emissions data. We've based our tier three on the cap, right?
But you have emissions data. You know what combined cycle Herzogs, what their emission levels are in their permits, and you know what
and those
regular turbines
allowable versus.
Yeah, well, that's another question.
Okay.
Yeah.
Allowable versus
is it total or is it per megawatt hour? That's another is your
total
you know.
Per megawatt hour.
Yeah.
Do you include the scrubbers and the SCRs that are 100%, which are the basis of those emission calculations in the permits? Those are emission calculations aren't based on the emissions of coal. Now we could possibly go back, for instance, to DOE information. I think that you put together, and we could see what the emissions from from burning gas. I might have manual talk about this, but so it has nothing to do with pollution control equipment that might be put on there. It's just your general emissions from burning natural gas, and then you can look at what the savings might be if you put a Herzog on. And you have the same megawatt output, how much less gas you might be able to burn. I mean, we might be able to do something like that with DOE information, but those are just some of the problems that we face and that I think the committee faces in talking about this stuff.
So am I hearing it might apply easier to like a greenfield project than like an existing project that you're adding equipment to? Whereas in Wayne's example, it was combustion turbines versus combined cycle. I mean, those are total plants.
And I did that because it was easy to get the data.
Okay. All right. Don, did you present a motion? Where are we now? Did you?
I'll modify the motion to say to the extent possible. Since you guys, I'd like to modify my motion to couch it to the extent possible and that you are able to acquire the data, take a look at it and do what you can.
That's a request, not a motion.
Basically, it's to table the issue until our June 4th meeting.
Yeah. And looking at whatever staff can give us and whatever some of the rest of us can put together as well.
All right. Do we have a second?
I second it.
All right. We have a motion. Those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. Motion carries. We'll go forward. All right. The next item we need to get to is back to Part B. And for those that you arrived late, we had a kind of a technical glitch, and now we have it.
So just so everybody sees, what I did was implement the things that we read into the record earlier. There was one general instruction to try to remove references to equipment in the description at the beginning of some of the descriptions. So we just, even though it's probably not great grammar, we directly went in on item B1. We, instead of saying equipment used to, we said used to remove impurities. There are some situations where you couldn't cut it all out, but in most cases the description has been changed, and I made all the changes that we had discussed, including that B12 change. There's that language that I had read. It's a much more efficient way of clarifying that it's only after combustion or gasification. So I would move that the committee recommend that the staff integrate this into the pending rule package as part of the proposed rule revisions.
All right, we have a motion on the table. Do we have a second? And we have a discussion.
Can we have one? Okay.
We have discussion after a second, and then we'll have discussion. That's all right.
I'll second, but then I want to have a discussion about one thing.
Fine. Okay, we have a motion with a second. Is there any discussion?
Here's my discussion, which is on B12, which I'm generally okay with. But depending upon what option we go, could there be a case made, Mike, that some of these byproducts or co-products realized after combustion and gasification could be sold for profit and then therefore be considered partially production equipment? Or is the type of products you're getting, they're not the type of stuff you're going to make money off of anyway?
Well, my position is that none of these materials, none of the things that produce these materials could be construed as production equipment because they're all essential to the pollution control chain.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why this.
So even if you use the fly ash for road base or whatever,
it's generated by a pollution control device. And that's the distinction that limits the applicability of this as any kind of problem. That's why I think this is safe ground for us, because we can grapple with the other issues we need to grapple with on the cap. And we may figure out that this equation works or a revised version of the cap works, but here we're talking about a class of equipment that's generated by pollution control equipment. The class of materials.
I have a question. I think you can put me at ease. Right now, on a coal plant, and you get the baghouse or whatever exempted, does that include all this stuff for handling the?
Yeah.
Now it does.
Yes.
Oh, it already does.
This is the current state of the law.
Okay.
The equipment.
I just wanted that clarified.
That's kind of why I think it's an easy call.
This would not be any change. What's changing is this is a different kind of, potentially a different kind of production process, but we're still only talking about the equipment used to gather up all the bad stuff.
Yeah.
Okay.
One comment that you may have missed, B16 and B18 in the description. Should we strike the word equipment in those two items?
B16?
Yeah, in the description. I mean, in the category.
Oh. Yeah, that is.
I don't know if it matters that much, but
I'm okay with that. Let's just do that. We can. Everybody's comfortable.
I'd almost wish you'd leave it in 18. It sounds funny if you don't have something there. You need property or...
Property.
Property be fine, but...
Well, property's at the top of the column.
Well, then you...
I'm not going to push it hard.
Whatever, I don't care. It just reads funny if you take it out, is what I was...
Especially since we've taken... The reason you might keep it, Bob, is because we've taken the equipment out of the description. So if you actually try to read them together, you say regulated air control. Yeah, exactly. I'm not here yet. I just think, especially in 16, it's a problem.
So it's no longer a PEL, it's a PPL. Predetermined property list.
Well, even B15F, we're not really exempting the technology. But anyway, okay. I'm all right with it. Leave it as it is.
15 years of PEL goes out the door.
We have a motion.
This is a new list. Progress.
Do we have any other discussion on this up? Sounds like we're ready for a vote. Those in tell you what, I don't know if it's appropriate to ask for public discussion. We haven't had, haven't done that to this point. But I want to remind people again that we have an opportunity here for input before we vote. Okay. All right. Then we'll call the vote. Those in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Those opposed, no. Motion carries. Thank you. We've accomplished a couple of something today.
One. Look at that.
All right.
That's right. We get one.
Any other rules? Old business, new business? We're going through this quickly now. And again, we had two that signed up to speak, but I take it that that's just if needed. Okay. All right. Thank you for coming.
I'm going to adjourn.
All right.
Second.
We have a motion to adjourn. Those in favor say aye.
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 Opposed? No. We are adjourned, and our next meeting is June the 4th. Thank you. We don't know yet. Oh, yes, it is. Yes, it is. We do know.
It's this room?
And also, please put on your calendar June 16th. That's just a reminder. If you want to come, the commission will have their hearing.
You know, I have to run the numbers.